Welcome back to the Peninsula Health Emergency Department Intern and Resident Podcast. I'm Sarah McKenzie, and in this podcast I'm going to talk you through my five top tips for five basic procedures in ophthalmology. Ophthalmology is one of those topics, like embryology perhaps, which medical school tries to teach you about, but you think, well, I'm going to be an orthopaedic surgeon anyway. And then you become an intern and bugger, you have to see eyes in emergency. It's such a complex topic, many people get completely put off even attempting to learn the basics. And that's what we're going to cover here. We're not going to describe a comprehensive eye exam, but we'll start with three things we expect you as a JRMO to have done for every eye patient before coming to seek advice from a boss. And then two minor procedures we expect you to be comfortable with, which will form part of your next step of your examination, using the slit lamp. We're going to have a whole session dedicated to the slit lamp coming up. This is just to lay the groundwork. Every patient you see with an eye complaint must have three vital signs taken of their eyes. This should be completely standard, just like having your temperature, pulse, and other vital signs measured at triage for all other medical conditions. Interestingly, in the emergency department at the Royal Victorian Eye and Ear Hospital, this is exactly what the triage nurses do. They take the three vital signs of everyone's eyes. These vital signs are number 1, visual acuity, number 2, pupillary responses, number 3, intraocular pressure. It goes without saying that because there are two eyes, usually, you have to check the vital signs in both eyes. After giving you my tips on how to measure these, tip number 4 and number 5 will relate to how to avert an eyelid and how to instill eye drops. Tip number 1. A visual acuity is essential for all patients presenting with any eye symptoms. There are a few points of note here. Firstly, perform the visual acuity before you blind your patient with your torch testing their pupils and blur their vision by putting in local anaesthetic drops to check their intraocular pressure. The convention for checking acuity is at 6 metres. Then if you find the patient can't read the top line, move to 3 metres, then 1 metre, then see if they can count fingers, and lastly, if they can't do that, check to see if they have any perception of light. Make sure people are wearing their usual glasses or lenses for distance vision to check their acuity. Also ensure they've completely covered the eye you aren't testing. Don't get them to use their fingers, you'd be surprised how many people peek through. Get them to use the palm of their hand or a piece of paper. You're probably familiar with the phrase 20/20 vision. This refers to the system of testing people's vision at 20 feet, predominantly in America, which is the same as 6 metres, roughly. You'll see that the letters on the Snellen chart correspond to numbers down the side. Towards the bottom, there'll be a number 6 for 6 metres, or in some cases a 20 for 20 feet. At 6 metres, it's normal for people to be able to read more than half of the letters at this line. So start with this line, point to it, and see how many letters they get right. If they get more than half the letters right, try the row below and see if they get more than half the letters right on that one. Then continue down the chart until you find a line where they can't get more than half right. To record the acuity, write it down as the distance from the chart, which is usually 6 metres, over the line that they get more than half right on. So in Australia, normal vision would be 6 on 6. Tip number 2. Checking their pupillary responses is also essential for all patients presenting with any eye symptoms. This has to include the direct, consensual and swinging torch tests. The light that you use needs to be bright and the room relatively low light. My advice is to use a torch on your iPhone. It's very bright. The swinging torch tests probably rings a bell in the bowels of your memory. It's looking for what's called a relative afferent pupillary defect, or RAPD. What does this look like? Well, when you shine the light into the good eye, both pupils constrict, although less than you would expect for normal pupillary constriction. When you shine it in the bad eye, both pupils dilate. When you return it back to the good eye, they constrict again. This suggests optic nerve disease, such as optic neuritis, or obstruction of light to the retina, such as a vitreous hemorrhage or retinal detachment. One word of warning is to be careful to swing the light from above the patient rather than using an axis around their nose, or you could potentially trigger a near accommodation response, which could cause pupillary constriction. Tip number 3. Intraocular pressure measurement is also essential for patients presenting with any eye symptoms. Every hospital has a different device. They're all expensive and you need a consultant to demonstrate it before you use it. Remember that the devices need to touch the cornea, the clear part of the eye over the non-white part of the front of the eye. And as such, depending on the device, you may need to put local anaesthetic drops into the eye. Don't forget to test both eyes. High intraocular pressure is considered to be that that's greater than 20 millimetres of mercury, and it suggests possible glaucoma or hyphema. Tip number 4. If you think that someone has a corneal foreign body, or in fact if you find a corneal foreign body, you must avert their eyelids to be certain there isn't a subtarsal foreign body, that is one stuck under their eyelid. It's a common problem and you won't find that foreign body unless you look for it. Averting the eyelids is actually a bit more tricky than it looks and it's a bit uncomfortable, so you need to be confident when you do it. Before you do it for the first time, ask a consultant to demonstrate the technique to you. You'll need a cotton wool stick for this, so make sure you have one ready. Tip number 5. Make sure you have a good technique for instilling eye drops. Not only do you need to do this well so it isn't uncomfortable for your patients, but also so you can teach them the correct technique for instilling their own eye drops at home. There are plenty of patient information leaflets on the internet you can print off for them if you want to send them home with drops. Make sure you have the patient tilt their head back, look up, and retract their lower lid. Quickly drop your medicine into the fornix between the white of their eye and their lower lid. You must warn them, it's going to make their eyes sting for many drops. The common culprits for this are the local anaesthetics. Common drops that we might use in emergency would include, for example, fluorescein. This is a yellow-coloured drop. We use them to examine eyes under a blue light on a slit lamp to look for epithelial defects of the cornea, such as those from an abrasion or a corneal ulcer. Sometimes the fluorescein actually comes on a paper strip instead of a drop. Other drops that we might use in emergency include topical local anaesthetics, such as tetracaine. These generally take about 30 seconds to start working, and they last about 15 minutes. If the patient's grittiness or pain goes away after the initial stinging when you put it in, with the local anaesthetic drops, it's highly likely that a corneal problem is responsible for their pain. Finally, sometimes we dilate pupils to examine the fundus using mydriatics. Tropicamide would be the most commonly used in emergency for this purpose. Other mydriatics include homatropine and cyclopentolate, which also dilate the pupils, but are mainly used therapeutically to paralyse the pupil where painful pupillary spasm occurs, such as some anterior chamber conditions. You must advise the patients not to drive after you dilate their pupils, as their vision will be blurry for an hour or so. Be very careful you check the label of any eye drops which you use. Whilst fluorescein is obvious because of its colour, the bottles for all the others look exactly the same, and I'm embarrassed to say that I've sent someone to see an ophthalmologist because their pupil was inexplicably dilating in front of me, and I hadn't realised that I'd accidentally picked up a vial of dilating drops instead of local anaesthetic drops. And that concludes today's podcast. Fairly easy, really. Just remember that every patient needs 3 vital signs taken of their eyes if they present with eye symptoms. Number 1, visual acuity. Number 2, pupillary responses. Number 3, tonometry. Tip number 4 is to remember that everyone with a possible corneal foreign body needs their eyelids averting. And finally, tip number 5 is to check very carefully the label on the minims of any eye drops that you use in emergency.